You know that I've been watching you. You know, 'cause I've been talking to your friends. They told you what I said to them. I said love.
Welcome to the 14th edition of the Brant Advocate Podcast. I'm your host, Mark LeFerrier, and what you are listening to right now is Caffrey. Caffrey is a 20-year-old alt-folk singer from Brantford, Ontario. Her influences are people like Lisa Hannigan, Serena Ryder, and The Beatles. Her self-titled debut EP has been described as playful, innocent, honest, and even naive. Rich, warm, and inviting, Caffrey's voice delivers effortlessly. I just read that from the CBC bio of Caffrey. Caffrey is a local group. I saw them play for Mental Health Week, and I thought, wow, they are quite good. They just recently played at Harmony Square, and if you want to check them out and get the latest about where they're playing in the community, check them out at facebook.com/CaffreyCG. So that's CaffreyCG. So what do we have on the podcast today? Well, last edition, we had a read-through of an article called Inside the Methadone Clinic, which was all about the methadone clinic. And if you haven't checked that out, I suggest you check it out. I'm going to talk with Allison M. Leonard. Allison M. as in Michael, Mark, Matthew. Allison M. Leonard. What's actually the M stand for, Allison?
It's Marie.
Marie. Oh, that makes a lot more sense. So I'm talking with Allison, who's here right now, and we're going to talk about that article. So give a little rundown of what that article is.
All right. So I have just finished up my BA of journalism at Wilfrid Laurier University's Brantford campus, and sort of a bit of a journalism thesis in your fourth year is what you do. Where you write a 3,000-word piece on a topic of your choice. I started early, so I was really working on sort of engaging the community on this as well. So there were a lot of Twitter views involved. And
a Twitter view? What's that for the people at home that don't know what that is?
Oh, so it's an interview on Twitter, just like what it sounds like. The ones I conducted were actually with Mary Chris Friel and Annette Fitch of the DBBIA. So they're sort of just held to have an interview, but engage the public with it as well.
So were some of the quotes that you actually used in the article from Twitter and not necessarily from a phone conversation or a face-to-face?
Yeah, they were. I definitely made sure to meet with the people I interviewed on Twitter as well to sort of verify and make sure everything was okay. But I really liked that because there was it allowed for feedback.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So what, you get this assignment, and everybody has this assignment in your program, right?
Yes.
Then why'd you pick the methadone clinic?
I was really passionate about it. I mean, there's sort of two sides to it. Being a student on campus, you just hear people, literally just complaining about it, walking by, saying, oh, that's the meth lab. And it's no, that's not what it is.
It's Breaking Bad over there, right?
Yeah, and so there's, I noticed a general lack of understanding and just a sort of family history and family commitments. I've always been really passionate about addiction and social services to aid in that. And
how come?
My parents have gone through a pretty big struggle with drug addiction, and that's part of my passion for writing so much, so.
Okay, sort of the social issues and the rest
of
that. Yeah,
definitely, and so that's where I'm drawing this from, and I think it allowed me to, one, have a little bit more understanding, but also the empathy and the sympathy needed for an article like this.
That's interesting. When I did a lot of speaking at the university and the college downtown for various years, I teach at the college now, but when I was coming in and doing these guest lectures, especially when I had my political hat on, there'd be a lot of, hey, you know what I want to talk about is burnouts downtown, you know, why don't they get out of our campus? And be like, well, you know, they were here before your campus. And by the same token, I used to live not that far off. I used to live at Yates, which is just by the train station. I'd say, you know, there's lineups and there's a lot of issues and there's issues with parking and there's all these other issues. When it comes to a couple of the bars downtown that used to not be there, and now they are, but nobody says, hey, Laurier students, why don't you go somewhere else, right? And it seems to me, and maybe a lot of people, maybe I'm wrong, correct me if I am, but there sometimes can be a bit of an us versus them, whoever feels like they're us and whoever feels like they're them when a campus comes to a town. And I feel articles like this one, Becca Vandekamp has written a few articles for us as well. Alicia Senko, who's one of our owners, has written a few that I think bridge some of that and try to say, well, look, there's a meld happening here. And I think it's starting to happen more than maybe it used to. So it sounds like there was even a little bit of an impetus on your end of saying, okay, well, there's misunderstandings on all different sides. Let's figure it out.
Well, there really was. And I think I sort of came upon the story at the exact right time, if there can be a right time to write about a methadone clinic.
Yeah.
I walked into our campus and there was already, the clinic was there and the debate started maybe a year after I started at Laurier Brantford between the city, the BIA, and the clinic owners. And I mean, the initial complaints were about, as you heard in the last podcast, about drug paraphernalia, about loitering, and about litter. But the questions that were being asked were, is that a front? Is it about gentrification? Mm-hmm. And we just won't say it.
And that's a tough one to answer, right? Yeah, I know a lot of businesses downtown who are who feel both ways about it and say, well, actually, there's issues either way, and that there are some issues. So there's a lot of discussion, and I think it's good. And I was watching now this Twitter piece that you did. It was interesting because there were a lot of people firing off in all directions, and it's kind of like it felt a little bit like maybe herding cats. You know, lots of different opinions and lots of people actually engaging on the topic. So take us through that a bit. What was that like?
So I'd never done a Twitter view before, so I don't know why I was so ambitious that I thought I would do my first one with the mayor. But I really wanted to try new, like, social experiments in journalism, something that's, I think, working really well, and having that two-sided conversation in media is so important, I think. So
two-sided? That's like a 10-sided conversation.
Yeah, really.
People interacted.
Yeah,
right?
And I found that a lot. I think, like, a bit of a hashtag started, which was great. And I like there was just so much more community involvement than I expected. Of course, I did rally for support. I started off with saying, like, if you have a question, tweet me in advance, hoping to get a bit of a handle on the question flow. Didn't really work as well as I had hoped. So it was coming in at the same time. I had people tweet to me, and I would tweet that to the mayor just to make sure that I could keep the conversation in a structured flow. I did get some criticism for that, saying that I was sort of influencing the conversation to my own benefit, which I understand. There's, like, no way for me to prove that I wasn't doing so, but it's more to get a cohesive conversation going, it's got to be monitored, and it's like any comment section or, like, blog online. I think it's the same idea.
Yeah, absolutely. Because if not, then the internet can just go, and social media specifically can go so negative and attacking so quickly, and then people just get defensive. You don't get any conversation. You don't get any engagement. You just get people screaming for lack, you know, screaming in caps, I guess.
Yeah. So I think the monitoring helped with that a little bit. Even with that, we did have a lot of discussion between people from then on and afterwards. As well, other media outlets in town sort of made use of the Twitter view and blogged about it. I think the Expositor did. You guys picked it up a little bit. So I was really happy about that. I mean, one, it was exposure for my project for class, but most importantly, it was exposure for the issue that needed. So the nice thing about this project was that it was both a product of and a catalyst for this debate.
Let's talk about the people you met.
That was the hardest part. The main character in the story, as you guys heard, her name is Jamie. She's now 21.
So when you say character, this is a real person.
She is a real person. Okay. And all real names were used. Everyone was fine with it. They really wanted their story to be told, which I admired a lot. I spent a lot of time in the clinic, more than I expected. It was, like, in your fourth year of university, you don't expect to be hanging out in the methadone clinic at least once a week, and it was probably the most valuable thing I did. So there was one girl, woman, I particularly attached to. Her name is Jamie, and as I mentioned in the article, we really mirrored each other. We're the same age. We cared about a lot of the same things.
Is this the one where you talked about we were probably watching the same shows on YTV at the same time?
That's it. So we had all these conversations, and what got me thinking really about focusing my article towards the characters, which I tried to do, was the fact that, like, what put me on the side writing the article and what put her on the side being written about, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we come to the conclusion of that in the end, that, like, the community will decide what the answer to that is and the solution as well.
Hmm. And you came in the first time you saw children at the methadone clinic and you thought,
Well, I think maybe I'm naive, and or maybe I was naive. I don't think I am about this anymore. And coming from, like, I've never been into a methadone clinic before. I thought it was, you know, a really structured process where children weren't to be in, and it was really explicit. And you literally walk in, it's just a clinic. It's like any other doctor's office.
Some of that, it's scary how scary something becomes when it isn't really. It's just the reputation of it. I once did an event at the Ring, right? And and I remember I talked to an older lady who said to me, well, we can't do it at the Ring because the bathrooms are disgusting. And I said, oh, have you been to the Ring? She said, no, I just heard the bathrooms were disgusting. So she insisted on coming to the meeting with me. And she mentions this to the owner and the manager at the time. And they show her the bathroom. She goes, oh, well, it's not disgusting at all. But it became a rumor, a reputation that that's disgusting. And it wasn't true at all. I used to work right next to the Ring, so I had lunch there all the time. And the methadone clinic, I think, takes on sometimes a mythic piece in our society. You mentioned, not in our society, in our community, you mentioned students going, walking by and thinking it's a meth lab, right? The word meth and methadone and get confused with people, you know, what it is exactly, what people are doing. People think that people who are on methadone. They're actually in recovery when a lot of times people think that they're drug-addled, right? Which isn't the case. There's so many myths about a methadone clinic that it becomes really, really difficult to piece together the truths, mm-hmm. right? And is that why you went every week?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I found myself getting attached to the characters. I'll call them individuals, I suppose. I'm not writing the story
people,
anymore.
Humans, yeah.
Yeah, it's journalism speak. I apologize.
Yeah, that's okay. We do it too in clinical, right? Clients and patients.
Yeah.
And...
So I found myself getting attached. I wanted to know more. I wanted to know what was going on in their life. But with a piece like this, I don't think you can just look at the political and social issue side. Like, it needed to be about the people experiencing it, which is my mistake in writing this, I think. I started with the BIA and the city and about their debate, and it wasn't until about 3 or 4 months in that I had actually worked up enough courage to go into the methadone clinic. I felt like I needed the info first, as if to not be naive, and it didn't help at all.
Yeah, you don't know until you do, right?
Yeah.
That's good that you did, though. So what surprised you the most?
The money. I don't even mean the financial side of the clinic, but walking in and being like, you clearly work in like an upper side of society, and you are here because you're addicted to something you took for depression, or you're addicted to something you took because you hurt your back really badly. That was something that was really striking. Not only did we see children, it wasn't people from the depths of society, as if it's
like Les Mis.
Yeah, which is, I think, how I was taught, and many students are taught, and not just students, but individuals in the community. It was everyday people. It's literally a doctor's clinic with a mix of everybody.
Yeah, well, that's the thing sometimes people forget, is that while there might come a time with certain opiates, especially things like Oxycontin and Oxycodone, where there is an addiction piece, and then therefore there are things that are illicit and implicit, but a lot of times how you start by getting addicted to those is because something happens in your life and a doctor prescribes something like that, and you start taking it, and they're very addicted. Right, so a lot of times when people come to this, it's not through a gateway of another drug. Often it's through a gateway of, you know, an accident or something where they were hurt, a surgery, whatever it might be that didn't go well, and a prescription. Right, so you trust that prescription and that doctor, and then sometimes you're on for 5, 10, 15 years, and then sometimes you're addicted. So that's the thing, that unlike a lot of other drugs, the start isn't, you know, some back alley.
Mm-hmm.
That can be the end. It can be the middle part. But often the start is a doctor's office or a car accident or something that can happen to any of us.
And I think that's the part that's often disregarded as well as criticized. People feel as if it's back alley drug addicts stealing money from the system, but it's a prescription like any other that starts it off from the Ontario healthcare system. That was a lot of a big portion of the debate was whether it was for-profit or non-profit sector, whether it was part of healthcare or not part of healthcare, and I think just education around that piece was something necessary for the community.
Yeah. What would you think? What would you say would be the one thing you'd want people to really take away from this article?
That the methadone clinic's not enough. It's I went through a variety of stages in what I believed about the methadone clinic. Going in, not knowing what I believed, eventually thinking it was the savior of individuals whenever I met these people whose life were in shreds and now it was stable, and then thinking that where do they go from here? And that's something that I don't know if the methadone clinic is supplying. I think I've thought on this for quite a long time, and I can develop an opinion now that I think is realistic, and moving to a more holistic model and healthcare provision and education to addiction in this community is absolutely required.
Absolutely. I completely agree. I got to ask you this, and it's a personal question, a deeply personal question. I've been wondering, I think a lot of other people are wondering, how'd you do on your project? What was your grade?
Would you like to know, actually?
I actually would, if you're willing to tell. If not, I totally... you didn't fail, I take it.
No, I did really well. I got an A+. I'm fairly certain I was in the top 5%. So.
All right. Wow, this is a high five. There we go. Woo.
That's great. I don't know. I think my prof was really supportive as well of the story, and he seemed involved in it and interested, and a great deal of that mark, if I could share a mark and share the wealth of it.
Sure.
Not that there's any wealth in getting a journalism degree.
No, no. Quite the opposite, actually, right?
Yeah, so much. So much of that goes out to so many people in the community who really supported this article, both on Twitter and in person. I mean, the advocate was a huge help. Even people from the BIA were a huge help. The city councillors who were willing to talk to me about something they knew they would be grilled on, even though I was a student.
Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people who are willing to talk to you specifically about this very controversial issue.
Yeah, you've got to give yourself some credit.
I'm one of them. I'm quoted in the article, and I'm not entirely sure why. But I think, you know what, I think people might have got a sense that you were coming at it without an agenda, that you were coming at it from a point of view of a student looking for some answers in a community that she adopted for a while. Right?
I really hope that came across, and that it was at the time when there was this. There were about three major discussions or major parties in this debate, and I don't think they had really discussed until there was this annoying student just knocking on all their doors.
Yeah, befuddling everybody who gave her a quote.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's next for you? What's up with you? What are you doing?
A lot of things are up with me. So since then, I've left Laurier Brantford. I finished my degree. I'll be graduating in October.
Woo-hoo.
So I have moved to Waterloo for an elected position by the student body. It's the president and publisher of Wilfrid Laurier University student publications, so I oversee all our media departments at both Laurier campuses, maybe a third if there's Milton eventually. So we have like the Core, the Sputnik, Radio Laurier, a market research group, yearbooks, and if I'm missing anyone, I'm sure they'll grill me on it. But
Sure.
So that's a big part of my life as well. I do communications for the Canadian University Press.
Great.
So that's all university press across Canada. I'll do their press releases and social media. And after that, I'm a journalism student. I don't know what's next for me.
Oh, perfect. I'll figure it out. But so I guess we're going to keep our agreement with the Sputnik to give you guys space and you guys throw us some content, and is that still happening
through
the next year?
That was such a huge help for us, just having those community partnerships and not only exposure for the Sputnik, but hopefully issues that matter to students that hopefully the community cares about as well. So,
well, and for us, it was great to have Sputnik articles and Laurier articles in our paper because, frankly, it's a big part of the community, and as it should be, and it's a perspective, and it's good content, you know. So we love exposing new voices to the larger community, and I'm really happy about it. So, and I think articles like yours, which I know wasn't from the Sputnik, but was from the journalism program, I think those articles, it would be a shame for an article like that, and in my opinion, don't blush, but an article that good to not be shared in print, right? I think that, you know, I remember when I was doing my communications degree, and there'd be some things where you'd write them, and you go, the prof's going to see this and read it, and I read it, and I'm going to put it in a drawer, and it's never going to see the light of day. So if something like The Advocate can help with that, that's great.
And it's been a huge help. The fact that the story still has legs, like 4 or 5 months later, and it's being discussed, I think that's important as well. Everybody's had a chance to digest the story, hopefully, and can hopefully generate a little more discussion.
I actually think it's going to have longer legs than that, because I think with the I'm on that that group that's helping with the Detox mm-hmm. Rehabilitation Center, and I think groups like that, and other addictions focus groups will look at an article like that for the next couple of years.
Really,
and because it captures something in a moment in time that I think is really helpful from my perspective anyway. So, hey, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. This is a great experience, especially because we're at Camp Wilusup right now.
Yeah, well, let's explain that to the people. We're in Goderich by weird fluke. The Advocate is actually participating, and I'm giving a speech on the last day of the camp for Wilfrid Laurier University student publications, which is all those Radio Laurier, The Cord, The Sputnik, and we're talking about, from the Advocate's point of view, around community development and media. But this has been great. We're at Camp Kintail, and so if you heard guitars in the background or people walking by talking about angry goats or how great the food was, that's why. We're not in a studio. We're in like a studio camp.
Yeah, I'd really like to give everybody some imagery. Mark and I are surrounded by bunk beds and tables and towels hung up on the wall.
Yeah, it's open chip bag, my partner Rebecca's hat and her luggage. So yeah, this is professional journalism, I think.
I think this is what it's meant to be.
Okay, well, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
No, thank you for having me and for coming to the camp as well. And hopefully, I'd really love to work on a partnership, especially because I don't live in town anymore, on like a follow-up article.
It'd be great.
On this, and our follow-up podcast, whatever works.
We would print it, and we would podcast it. So
that's great.
Yeah, I want to thank Allison Leonard. You can find her on Twitter at Allison M. Leonard. And check out the Sputnik. They write some really good articles. It's my favorite publication in town. I read it. It's got a variety every time I read it, so it's a good read. So this is another edition of the Brand Advocate Podcast. We're going to play you out with some Caffrey. Again, check them out on Facebook, facebook.com/CaffreyCG. Great band whose heart is in the right place. Their vocals are in the right place. And we love this new music partnership that we're doing with different musicians in town. So if you're a musician and you want your stuff featured on the Brand Advocate Podcast, we'd love to do it. And we'd love to point people to your Facebook, your website, your Twitter, and whatever else, your gigs. The voice of the stories of Brandt and the songs, I guess, that are the stories of Brandt. So again, until next time, just remember, keep on advocating.
In the light, I want you to. The secret to me is like a sweet cup of tea. I'll share it with you. You are the light that lights a room. You are the flower, I watch it bloom. I'll play the pipes, you sing the tune. And I swoon. I don't know if I'm mad. I don't know why I'm missing something I never had. I don't know why I'm crying. I don't know what to do. It's easy to see that there's a will to be free, but not free from you. You are the light that lights the room. You are the flower, I watch it bloom. You play the pipes, I'll sing the tune. Play the pipes, you sing the tune.